Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Ben Jones, SteakHollers.com, who joined us in the previous half hour. We're moments away from Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com. Coming up tomorrow, Tim Newton, the play-by-play voice of Purdue football, will join us. On Thursday, our high school announcers will join us, as well as my brother on the show. Saturday's games at noon kickoff. We're on beginning at 10:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day.
Hand off right side. He pins it back. C.J. Anderson, full head of steam to the end zone. Touchdown, Denver. C.J. dropped the ball in the end zone and sprinted directly to the Broncos sideline. And finally, something to be happy about here for the Bronco fans as Denver puts together an excellent drive. And they have tied this football game at 6 with 9:10 left in the first half.
Dave Logan with the call on KOA in Denver as running back C.J. Anderson had a great Super Bowl, by the way, scored in that 7-yard run. And the Broncos beat Bill O'Brien's Houston Texans 27-9 last night at Invesco at Mile High. All right, a lot of different impacts from Saturday night's game. Many have wondered about the recruiting impact on the game. With that, we bring in Ryan Snyder for Rivals.com. Ryan, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Good to talk to you, buddy.
All right, good to talk to you. There are different levels of impact Saturday night. We'll get to the impact that you deal with. What kind of feel did you get from the boatload of recruits that were in on Saturday night?
I think boatload is definitely an understatement. They were all out for this one, which, heading into the week, some people were saying, could this set up to be something like what happened to Rutgers when, they had 200-plus recruits and got destroyed. Now, I think we all had a pretty good idea that Penn State wasn't going to lose anything like that. But some fans were worried about it. So I think now, when we look at it and everything that took place, it's very clear to everyone that this is why Penn State goes all out for events like this, because it is truly a win-win situation. Now, there was 150-some prospects in attendance. The actual list was actually somewhere around 180, 170, 180. Some guys didn't all show up. So I think 150 is a pretty fair estimation. And, from everything that I have gathered, it's a home run. Are guys lining up to commit today? No, it doesn't really always work that way. Guys still have to take official visits and whatnot. But tons and tons of prospects have had it. A lot of great reactions, everything from, even just the tailgate scene, the theme around town, obviously the game itself, the outcome. I mean, there's a lot of different angles that a lot of recruits felt positives in. And, I think it's really going to help Penn State down the road.
But you've done this a lot, and you've been around the block so many times. There isn't one be-all, end-all formula to this,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, fair enough.
I mean,
people go, you lose this game, and all of a sudden it's like nobody's going to come here. You win this game, everybody's going to come here. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. And actually, I'm really happy you brought this up, because when I do a lot of radio shows or talking to a mass crowd when it comes to recruiting in general, it's really a lot of people kind of try and dumb it down, and they ask Penn State got crushed this week, or Penn State dominated this week, how are recruits going to look at this? And my answer always is, where one thing I at least try to stress is that every recruit is different. Mom and dad see things differently. Every recruit sees things differently. There's so many little factors that go into that major decision at the end of the day. So, from the whiteout crowd, obviously everybody loved that. You know, the tailgates around town, you know, for guys that were new to Penn State, you know, seeing the atmosphere before the game. A lot of guys love that. You know, but when I look at this and when I parlay it to how it impacts 2017 guys that are going to be making decisions before, you know, the juniors and sophomores that were in attendance. I think the main thing to really take away from this is look, you know, this was a huge win, and obviously this is a true sign that Penn State's headed in the right direction. But if you throw back the pages a little bit and look at the Minnesota game, look at the Maryland game, just look at the general improvement that we've seen game in and game out now, you know, this is what guys really wanted to see. This is what Lamont Wade wants to see. This is what Tariq Castro-Fields wants to see. Dalen Wade-Perry, you know, we're talking about some of the top prospects that are left. You know, a lot of these guys want to see that, hey, not only is Penn State, you know, headed in the right direction, but they're steadily improving week in and week out. And again, just look at Minnesota, look at Maryland, and now look at this. You know, that's what these guys really wanted to see. And I think it's clear to everybody now that this is a positive for Penn State.
You were on the field as the final moments unfolded. Give me your perspective on what you were watching as everything unfolded and then all of a sudden you got enveloped.
Yeah, involved is an understatement. You know, I was trying to get out of there, man. It was really fun for about a minute or two, just because I've never been in anything like that. And then it got a little out of hand. I think that's mainly because I was sober all day and everybody else wasn't. but no, you know, it's big for Penn State. You know, Steve, I know you've seen every whiteout game here, just like I have. I've never missed a whiteout game going back to 2004, 2005. And, you know, we've seen a lot of fun times in here, and we've seen a lot of negative times, you know, in that atmosphere. You know, to have an upset like that, you know, there's only one thing that compares to it, and that's 2005. And to me, you know, this town really needed that. And it's kind of like what Franklin said, you know, it does kind of bring a town together in some degrees. Now, obviously, you know, from a national perspective, people look at that differently. But as someone who's lived here for a long time, has seen the ups, has seen the downs, mm-hmm. you know, to just see the general emotion on not just students. You know, the students get a lot of pub because they're the majority of people that rush. But, you know, I saw a lot of older adults, a lot of season ticket holders, you know, just basically crying, you know, because right. they've been waiting so long for that. So that's what really just kind of stuck with me the most, at least for the first couple of minutes. And then I was doing everything I could to find the tunnel.
What kind of breakdown in approximate numbers were there between high school seniors, high school juniors, and sophomores at the game?
Yeah, great question. Well, of course, you know, with the 2017 class, now, one thing I'll note real quick is that it is looking more and more likely that the 2017 class is going to have, you know, upwards of 20, 21, 22. Won't mm-hmm. be a completely full class, but mm-hmm. it'll have more than what it looked like, say, back in the summer where we were thinking it's probably going to be under 20. Mm-hmm. You know, Chance Sorrell's departure yesterday kind of shows the direction that some things are going. But anyway, at the end of the day, though, the 2017 class is still three-quarters of the way complete, and we are looking at something where, you know, only a handful of guys are going to finish this class out. So, obviously, because of that, the 2018 class, which is, you know, high school juniors, dominated. Now, you know, again, the list, I look at things a little differently. Now, the list itself is around 150 or so prospects, but mm-hmm. you really have to kind of cut that in half or really look at the top 30, 40%. Those are the guys that are scholarship-worthy prospects. And out of those players, which was about 30, 40, 50 or so, I would say it was easily, you know, 50, 60, 70% underclassmen, which is, you know, 2018 and 2019, 2020. You know, we did see a couple, you know, solid official visitors this weekend. Larry Oladipo is a guy to mention. Jalen Harris out of Ohio, wide receiver, he's a guy to mention. But this will have a really big impact on next year's class. I mean, that's who made up the bulk of the attendees. That's who made up the bulk of the guys that I've spoken with and have really raved about the event. So you're not going to see instant commitments, I guess, out of this, but you're going to see a lot of guys talking about this and 8 months from now saying, you know, I love this about Penn State, I love this about Penn State, and then seeing that atmosphere that one night, that really helped push me in that direction.
I know I've asked you this question before, but now that it is at least in a proposal stage, what are your thoughts on what they have proposed about early signing dates in college football?
Yeah. I'm a big fan of this, Steve. Now, look, there's a lot of things that have to be worked out. There's a lot of little tiny details that are very important details that have to be stressed. But as someone who is, I've done this for 7 years now, and there's a couple things that I've really picked up on. And look, I think my job, okay, as a media member, and seeing how recruiting has changed because of the impact of media, again, Rivals.com, Scout, 24/7, ESPN, all the newspapers, this has had as big of an impact on the recruiting world in general than anything else. And I know this kind of sounds off topic, but it's not. An early signing period is good for many reasons. Obviously, it cuts back on coaches contacting players. But one thing it's really going to help with is cutting back on the media. If I polled the top 50 prospects that were at Penn State's game the other night, I would say that at least 80% of them would say that the most annoying thing about this whole process is the constant contact, their constant text messages and calls that people like myself are doing. And I know I'm a hypocrite in this degree.
You have always been considered to be extremely judicious as to how you go about it, but you're only one person.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, let's look at this for example. I mean, Rivals.com has a site for every big school. 24/7 has a site for every big school. Scout is the same way. You know, ESPN is in this game now. You know, just look at the Penn State beat. Penn Live, Altoona Mirror. A lot of these, Pittsburgh Coast, yeah, a lot of these people cover recruiting now. And the media impact on all of it is becoming something that needs to be, I think, talked about more. Because it is a major, major impact on how guys go about this process. And it impacts guys making early decisions. So, Just to tally this all back to an early signing period, what it would be very nice about this is that it will allow guys to get out of the process if they want to get out of it. Look, recruiting freshmen and sophomores, that's here to stay. That's not going to change. It's only getting earlier and earlier, and it's not going to change. So what this will allow guys to do is to check out of the process if they feel as if they have done their due diligence their sophomore year, their junior year. And that's important because, again, this isn't just coaches contacting these guys every day. There's a lot of media members that are really making this into a frustrating process in some degrees. And I really think an early signing period would help with that overall blitz of calls and texts that these guys receive. I could do a 45-minute show on this. I could go all day.
I understand that. And what about the cutback to 10 camps in the off season?
It's good. I have mixed feelings on that. I think it's good, and I think there's going to be guys that are impacted positively and guys that are impacted negatively. It really just kind of depends on the recruit and where they stand. At that time in the summer. Again, you know, a lot of these guys are really trying to get their name out there more. But at the same time, a lot of those guys, maybe haven't come to the full realization at that time that they're not Division I prospects. So maybe they won't be paying as much down the road. I mean, there's a lot of pluses and minuses with it. I think it's good for the general scheme as that it'll allow the whole camp world to not totally get out of hand. We were only seeing more and more camps being added. So it's good from that sense. You know, it will hurt a few prospects here and there, but this is something that can't go on for 30, 40 days. It's a real grind on the coaches too. You know,
that's actually been my primary feeling about it. You know what? They need time too in life.
They do. They do. You know, all they get is that July dead period, really. I mean, it's work every other day, you know, in the off season. So, you know, the coaches need to be with their families too. And June used to be a month where they could kind of do that. And ever since the satellite camp started, that's been out the window. So I think this is a good thing definitely a good thing from their perspective.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for the perspective. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Ryan Snyder, Rivals.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, so we've tried to cover this from all angles, and one of them was the recruiting angle. Now we'll start locking in really on Purdue here the rest of the way. I mean, for the football team, it's been a question of, yeah, they went over some stuff on Sunday night, like they always do, and then a question of them looking at tape on their own. Well, I mean, and I can go through that because I've already gone through. I really took a long, hard look at the Purdue-Nebraska game. I wanted to see what they, you know, how it played out, especially with the an interim head coach. You know, I mean, you could sit there and look at some certain personnel groupings, for example, as to what Daryl Hazel did, but, you know, how was their approach in this game? And that's what I was looking for. What was their approach? And, you know, I mean, a lot of it was basic, like they always run. You know, well, you expect that. You can't change an entire playbook, but, you know, do you do some things different? Do you really throw the opposition off balance and do a few things? And that's what they were doing. That's what they did. Like I said, they went forward on fourth down four times. They made two of them, got a touchdown on one. They ran a fake punt. They ran an option pass. They ran a reverse. I mean, they did. I mean that is, they ran 69 offensive plays. That was seven of them. So I just, you expect the unexpected in something like this. But you know what? If you're the better team and you execute, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Which team can execute better? Penn State executed overall better than Ohio State did the other night. Okay. Well, they got to go out and do it again. Got to go out and do it again. And it doesn't really matter who it is. You just got to go out and just take care of business. I think Penn State's better than they are in several spots. All right, well, got to go out and got to prove it. And that'll be at noon on Saturday. Cubs and the Indians play game one of the World Series tonight. I'm actually looking forward to this. I think the Royals and the Giants, I watched it last year, but this is a little different. You know, it's as you know, I'm not really crazy today about how sports in some ways is covered. For example, I saw on CBSSports.com today, Steve Bartman referred to as a pariah. A pariah? I mean, I'm talking within the secondary headline, not, you know, within the story, but in the secondary headline, you know, Bartman won't throw a first pitch. They don't want, you know, pariah. Cubs fans don't want Cubs pariah, whatever. He's referred to as a pariah. He's a fan. He wasn't the one that gave up the six runs in the inning. I mean, that poor guy, since that night, has not gone back to a game.
2003. Be different if it was like last year or 2 years ago.
13 years he hasn't gone back to a game. And now you have a major sports outlet referred to him as a pariah. A pariah.
Really? He's a fan. He bought a ticket. Yeah, what would all of you have done if the ball was hitting your direction? Would you try to catch the foul ball? You're not totally aware of your surroundings. I mean, that's sad. That's sad. Then there's this one. At long last, LeBron's banner moment in Cleveland is here. You know, the other guys won too, you know. What, it's not a big moment for Matthew Dellavedova? He's never won a championship in his life. J.R. Smith? But it's LeBron's banner moment. Oh, it's LeBron's banner moment? Really? Like, should the other people go out for it? What are we doing here? He's obviously the best player, the leader of the team, the whole thing, but it is a team sport. And Cleveland hasn't had a championship of any kind since 1964 until they won it in 2016. Isn't this Cleveland's championship moment finally? After 52 years? Generations of Cleveland fans have grown up, no titles in anything. But it's LeBron's moment. Really? That's the headline on ESPN.com. LeBron's moment.
Yeah, you do have a lot of people that are going to be rooting for the Cubs for sure. And I think there's also another group of people. Hey, Cleveland already won a title earlier this year. Yeah, different sport, but still.
Yeah, but I don't like how sports is covered. They're wondering why football is down 24% on Monday night. Part of it is how they do it. I don't know what their research is telling him, but they're turning people off, I think. LeBron's banner moment arrives. Why should anybody bother showing up? It's his moment. It's a team sport, for goodness sakes. He's critical, but it's a team sport.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our sports bozo of the day.
13-14-year-old league in Providence, Rhode Island. They're playing a game. Suddenly they realize that one of the kids just looks a little bit out of place. That's because in the 13-14-year-old league, this kid's 18 years old. The league says they're disappointed. You're disappointed. Really? You're disappointed. 18 years old. He was several inches taller than the other, much bigger than the others, had facial hair and tattoos. Other than that, don't know how he stood out. Wow. I mean, it's a 13-14-year-old league, okay? So you're sitting there in a 13-14-year-old league. What's the idea that you're going to win all your games and you might get the Boston College job? What? What's the purpose? Yeah, I don't get this stuff. Oh, well. Oh, boy. Hey, tomorrow, Tim Newton, play-by-play voice of Purdue football, will be with us. Saturday, Thursday, our high school football announcers will be with us. And don't forget, on Eagle 107 on Saturday, Charleston Southern will host Bucknell at 11:45. Doug Birdsong flies solo. He's not going to get there. You know that. He's not going to get there. He's not going to be on time. He's not going
to
make it.
I said to him, this is his first true test after getting out of the garage, getting some work on that ticker. I said, you got to pace yourself here.
I mean, that flight gets canceled all the time.
Yeah, last I checked, I think Saturday's weather's not really all that clear.
Yeah, you know, I mean, fortunately,
changeable conditions.
Fortunately, it's great to have a real pro like Doug already on the trip. he's probably still not in the building, is he?
No. He's still he's still here.
He got here at 10. He always leaves at 3. It's all good. It's quite a job. The good news is he's lowered his handicap to single digits. All right. So, all right. World Series is tonight, game one. Kyle Schwarber is going to be probably the DH tonight.
Are the Cubs taking a real gamble on that?
No, I think it's a great move by the Cubs. Years ago, it's one thing when you're around sports a lot. I mean, you know, when you really, like, you get to be semi-inside, all right? And I think it's safe to say I'm semi-inside. Fair enough? Okay. So you really sit down and you talk with these guys and kind of, you know, you pick their brain and discuss things with them. Okay. And one of the things I was talking with, Ollie Marmol was the manager of the State College Spikes, the Cardinals affiliate. The Spikes got to the third deciding game of the series, of what would end up being their first New York Penn League championship, to go with the one they won this year. So they get to this deciding game, and after losing game two and the series is now tied, they take the entire team. Like, they got to get something to eat, so they take them over to an Olive Garden or something like that. And so I'm in there with them, and Ollie comes over and he has a napkin. On the napkin, he's got four different lineup combinations written on the napkin. He said, I want to run this by. He said, what do you think of these four lineups here? So I kind of look over and I go, well, I looked over to the right-hand corner, the upper right-hand corner. I said, that's your best offensive lineup right there. Which included a guy that had been an infielder playing left field for this game. Another guy who had been coming off the bench, and they were going to play him at first base. And I said, well, that's your best offensive lineup right there. And he goes, exactly. He said, that is the lineup I'm going with. He says, because when Tony La Russa said, when you got to a big game, put your best offensive lineup out there, your best bats. You can then fill in with the defensive players later in the game. That is what Joe Maddon is doing tonight with Kyle Schwarber. He feels that by putting him in as the DH, that's his best offensive lineup. That's why he's not starting Jason Hayward in right field tonight. His bat's been slow, his defense is good. But if he needs to bring Hayward in late in the game defensively, he has that option. He can do it. And Joe Maddon last year, when the Cubs beat the Pirates in the one-game playoff, what did he do? He started Schwarber in right field. It was only his eighth start of the year. Schwarber homered, and I think he drove in three of the four runs. Okay? And again, that's what he did. He put out his best offensive lineup in a big game. And you see that over and over again. The really good managers are the ones that do that, unless you've got a rock-solid lineup. If you've got a lineup that's a little bit in flux, that's what most of the really good managers do. You know, because you can always go back to defense later. And that's what the really good ones do. The ones that are kind of like, we'll save them for a pinch hitter. What? To do what? Get an at-bat off the bench cold? Dick in Milton. Hi, Dick. How you doing today?
Good, Steve. Hey, yesterday I was listening for a while, and then you had Coach Susan on, and then I had to go away and couldn't get in, and I don't know if you got many calls. And I really wanted to take an opportunity to actually – it's not more of an apology, but up to Coach Franklin, but how good I felt about Saturday night's football game. I really did for – I mean, I've been hard on him, and I know that. And I know that, you know, I mean, there's lots of reasons that they haven't done as well as they have. But I really that was the old Penn State football team in a sense to me a lot. I told some guys if they'd have had the defensive end in the whole ball game, maybe Ohio State would have had trouble scoring at all.
Yeah, but I give them a lot of credit for that because you talked about the old Penn State.
Yeah.
Well, not playing him in the first half because he missed some classes.
Yeah, is not the old supposed to do that.
That's the old Penn State right there, and he's done this repeatedly, Dick, where he's had guys out. And he's done it because he has a standard. They didn't meet a standard. And in order to win a game, he didn't bend his rule to do it. And I think that's the old Penn State standard right there, and he's followed that.
And obviously, you mentioned, I didn't realize that they had five sacks, and the quarterback had been five sacked the whole year, and they had five in that half, which is I told the guys he was in the backfield more times than their running backs were sometimes.
He had a terrific game. I thought Schwann had a terrific game.
Yeah.
And they did a good job with the rotation up front all night so they could stay fresh. But again, because Sickle sat out the first half, he was able to play actually the vast majority of the second half. They didn't have to sub often for him because he had plenty in the tank.
Well, they played well. They did what they had to do to win. I mean, nobody anywhere that's a football fan would have figured they'd score 17 on their answered points. I mean, that's just not against Ohio State. They might against somebody else, but not Ohio State, because nobody else really realistically does that. So I felt really good about it, and I felt good about them, and I like their chances going out. Will they win every game? Probably not. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, it's just one game in a sense, but the schedule is kind of in their favor in a sense, I think.
Well, I think this is where the even keel approach that he's tried to portray every single week. I think these are the weeks where I think that's supposed to pay off. In other words, a lot of people, why aren't you more emotional for Pitt? Why aren't you more emotional for Ohio State? I've always felt that kind of approach pays off, like after you win a game like this, that you're taking that same approach, and that way you can attack the next one the same way. We'll find out whether or not that pays off.
I mean, there's a couple of good. I mean, Iowa's not going to be any push. They're no cupcake football team right now,
no.
and I think Indiana's pretty decent this year. The team that actually scared me as much as anybody at the beginning of the year was Michigan State, and now I don't have as much. I'm not sure what's going on with their football team. Obviously, they lost to Maryland. They've lost some games now, and I don't think they're as good as what I thought they were. Maybe they're not as good as what anybody thought they were. I don't know.
Well, I know you listen to the show all the time, and going back to April or May, I felt that this was a year where Michigan State was hitting a rut. And a lot of people had questioned me about that, and it has nothing to do with anything except it goes in a little bit of a cycle. And I saw how many guys they've lost on the offensive line. I thought the change in quarterback was huge for them. I thought defensively they'd be better than they are, but they've had some injuries on that side, and that's something I didn't take into account when I talked about it.
Yeah, the one thing about it, Michigan State is, and of course I'm sure you've alluded to this. Even before Maryland and Rutgers got in the league, basically, like kind of maybe not as the intensity of a Michigan or Ohio State, but Penn State and Michigan State is probably their rivalry in the Big Ten in a sense. It's year in and year out. I think it has become that kind of a game now because obviously Michigan State doesn't even have. I don't think that has the same intensity even as Michigan and Ohio State.
I think it was getting there, Dick. Until then, they started playing around with the schedule because Michigan State and Penn State have been the final game of the season.
Right.
And the last five or six of them have really been crazy games, close games, and I think it was getting to be exactly where you were, what you were talking about. And then they took 3 years off.
Yeah.
And now it's been the last game the last 2 years. This will be the third year. And guess what? The next 4 years, they aren't. I'm not quite sure where things fall with that because the next 4 years, starting next year, it's Maryland home and away the last game, then it's Rutgers home and away the last game. So I don't know what the conference wants to do with it.
Well, I know we're moving on. The game's over.
Yep.
But I just wanted to get that out there. I mean,
I appreciate
it. If I'm going to be critical about somebody, I'm going to give them lots of kudos when they do the things that they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
I feel good about them. Yeah. I felt really good about them Saturday night and Sunday and yesterday and today. And I'm hoping that by the end of the season, I can see them going winning out and going to a really nice bowl this year, or maybe not.
And again, it's, you know, we're going to find out, and this will be a bellwether week as to, you know, what to see out of the football team. I can only base on what I saw Sunday. Sunday they looked really good. They looked fresh and ready to go, but they didn't practice yesterday because they always have Monday off. That's a school day, and they'll be back on the practice field tonight. In fact, they're not quite on it yet. But I'm going to get a good gauge tonight as to where they are. Are they flying around a little bit? They got some juice? Or are they going to be flat and make mistakes? Now, I'll give you an example. Penn State basketball, I went to their practice last night, and he gave them Sunday off. Yesterday wasn't a good practice, Dick. I mean, you know, and that happens sometimes when you get a day off. You don't get a good practice.
Yeah, I understand
now,
that.
Now,
yeah.
Football's a little different because that's their routine every week, so I think they're used to getting the day off right now. But basketball, for example, which had a series of great practices. I mean, the ones I went to last week were fabulous. I really liked what I watched. Yesterday was 180 of that, and that happens. Now they've got today off, but usually, you know, that's what I want to see tonight in practice. What kind of jump do they have? Are they engaged? What do they have to do? They're going to see a different style of team compared to the style they saw on Saturday night.
Well, let's hope things continue in the right direction, and I think they will. It seems like they're getting good recruits, and they're learning the system, and they're playing a lot better. And if everybody stays healthy, I mean, that's a key with any football team, but they got Kabinda back, and they got some guys back. I was a little concerned when the tight end went out there in a hurry, but he even got back in the ball game. So they're good. They got a lot of good personnel, and if everybody shows up every Saturday, and we'll be talking about the same good things on the next day and Sundays.
I'm hoping so. I hope so.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Dick, thanks. Awfully fair. Very fair. We will come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. World Series Game 1 is tonight. I'm looking forward to this tonight. I look forward to the series. The Cubs have done wonders for the ratings at Fox Sports 1. I mean, let's face it, Fox Sports 1's looking to find some sort of toehold out there. And, they have the baseball contract. And between TBS and Fox Sports 1, they split the American and National League Championship Series. And as luck would have it, Fox Sports 1 had the Cubs and Dodgers. And the Dodgers add a lot to it as well. And their ratings have been the highest that they've had. They've been getting some great stuff. Now, over-the-air Fox has the World Series. This is not a Fox Sports 1 deal. This is over-the-air Fox carrying it tonight. Fox Sports 1 is now hoping that the combination that they have between Major League Baseball and the Big Ten starting next year in football and basketball is their ticket to getting more people to watch their network. We'll find out how that plays out, but that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping for the fact that you can sit there in September and watch Big Ten football, then in October watch the National League Championship Series and the baseball playoffs in combination with Big Ten football, which then leads to November and Big Ten football, which then leads to December and Big Ten basketball. That's what they're hoping for the next 6 years starting in 2017.
I think they'll definitely be ready to cover the basketball aspect of it just for the past 2 years with all the Big East hoops coverage that they were doing.
They'll be ready to cover everything because they've been covering the Pac-12 and so forth. I mean, so their ability to cover a game is not an issue. It's the ability to get people to watch their games. I mean, that's what they're hoping for. They're hoping for the viewership. Their ability to cover a game's fine. Between the Pac-12 and the Big 12, they've been carrying games.
Well, that's what you've been saying for a long time, too. It's that live coverage of the games and not the quote-unquote Sports Center format show that they've been trying to do, and they've retooled two or three times and just didn't work out.
I mean, that stuff on the air is, you can actually visually see viewers leaving. as they sit there and try to do Sports Centers, and Fox Sports One does its version of sport. I mean, the Sports Center talk show Yap Fest is not working.
I'm just curious how long the Undisputed show is going to go. They're still, that's still in its infancy. It's only been on for about 2 months.
Yeah, they put a lot of money into that, though, Sean. You know, I mean, that's the thing. They put a lot of money into that.
I'm watching sports on other channels. Like, I was watching Chelsea Man U on NBCSN, and I saw a Fox Sports 1 promo for Undisputed.
I mean, they invested a lot of money in Skip Bayless. Not so much in Shannon Sharp.
Yeah, $5.5 million for Skip per.
Yeah, $5.5 million invested in him. They're not going to pull the plug on it that quickly, I don't think. But you know, but that's where it is. I mean, look, you've got 24 hours. I completely understand this. You have to fill it. I mean, you and I have to fill 2 hours a day. But we have a programming formula here as to what we do with what the great job Mark does in the morning, Dan Patrick, then into this show, and then the news, and then the live sports we have and things like that. Getting the Phillies on was great. You know, high school football stuff, high school basketball. So there's a formula as to how to fill it. And obviously, these talk shows are easy to do. I mean, it doesn't take you, like, you throw them in a studio, you got a camera, whatever. You know, you don't need a whole full, you know, you don't need a truck to do this. And it's part of filling the 24 hours. But as you know, I'm now into the mode of I don't even watch the pregame show. If somebody says, what do you think of Alex Rodriguez, Pete Rose, and Frank Thomas? I'm like, I don't know. Game's at 8:08 tonight. I'm on at 8:07. Right? I want to see the game. Now, if you're a real fan of the teams, yeah, you'll watch all the pregame stuff and things like that. You want to hear what people have to say about your team, your game, and so forth. I don't. I don't really need to know the backstory of Jorge Soler. I want to just... You know, I've seen him play enough. I know how he plays. John Lester, who has continued to be dynamic in the postseason, on the mound tonight for the Cubs, and the outstanding Corey Kluber on the mound tonight for the Indians. He has a slider that is the... I haven't seen many sliders better than his. What a breaking pitch that is. Two outstanding pitchers tonight, head-to-head. So that's what's coming up tonight. Game one of the World Series. I had a chance to go Friday night. I turned it down.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.